Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actress and comedian Mary Kennedy talks about how she was a roadie in her mother's band.
And so my mom was the house wedding band for the King's Grant Medieval Inn. And my mother would make sure that I was there and I would help her load in and load out. And I ended up being her roadie, and she would dress me up in her Marshall's business suit kind of clothing, and I played her manager, and I would make sure that the band got fed and that the band was safe and that the band got their drinks and their breaks. You know, I was propositioned many times as a 16-year-old looking 35, and I'd have to say my mother was the piano player in the band, and one guy said, well, she can join us. I said, you're an asshole.
Today on the show, comedian and actress Mary Kennedy talks about how she was a roadie in her mother's band, The Mood Swings. Stick around.
Hey, my name is Mary Kennedy, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of almost 11 years, that's the anniversary we're coming up on, 11 years in July. I think it might be, is it bronze? Is it silver? I don't know. 11 years in podcasting. Mary, I have made hundreds of dollars. And I don't know if you're with me. Anyway, I am excited about 11 years. So welcome to the show, you guys. Like I said, whether you're a new listener or somebody who's been with me this entire time, I'm really glad you're here. And I hope you had an opportunity to listen to comedian Jimmy Shin last week. Oh, actually, Mary Kennedy, you know Jimmy Shin
very
well.
Yeah.
Because I met you at his show.
Exactly. Yes. It was amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, he's a great guy, another comedian. And he is very interesting. He talked about, you know, his story was about going to school to be a lawyer, which is what his father always wanted him to do. It is part of his act now.
Yeah.
And then going through law school while dealing drugs. and then a really major bust. Yeah, but like he got busted, like scary, handcuffs, naked, spray you down, like,
wow.
You know, bad stuff. And I know, right? It's a great story. So go back, you guys, make sure to listen to Jimmy Shin from last week, but don't go anywhere today because today I'm with another fabulous comedian and actress, Mary Kennedy. You hear her. I know it's not that original. I mean, not original, but it's not that unique of a name, but you know, people do think of Mary Kennedy, don't they?
Well, yeah. And I am related to the Kennedys, and that's not my story today, but I am third cousins twice removed from that family. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, no, I am. You can see it with my Ted Kennedy nose and chin. If you really look at me, I mean, they can't see me on the podcast, but I'm on the socials. So you can see with the resemblance.
I think that is so fabulous. Wow. I actually did not realize that. I mean, I know you as a comedian and as an actress, and today you bring forth the topic, I was my mother's roadie. So you have even more skills.
Right. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Well, I'm anxious to hear this. I play guitar. I play piano. I would kill for my daughter to be involved, but she could care less.
How old's your daughter?
Well, we have that in common. My daughter's 14, and you have two children that are also teenagers, right?
Yeah, I have a son who will be 13 in a matter of days, and my daughter is 14, and she gets involved. She's an artist, so I can proudly say she's working on a project with me right now where she's helping me with some animation. But when it comes to acting and things like that, she kind of rolls her eyes and just says, you know what, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, that's really great, though, that she's enthusiastic for you. My daughter is also an artist, but it's all about her, you know? So she's doing her thing. And I am, you know, it's so funny to be so old to her. I mean, I know I'm old. I get that. But like, it's just weird to be old to her because I feel like I've seen everything. Like, I don't, know what you think I can't, I don't know, like what could be going on, you know, as she becomes a teenager, like
right.
I've seen everything. And she's just so cute. I'm actually going to be, I'm going to be supervising her, you know, one of the chaperones. I'm always the room parent. I'm always the chaperone. And I'm doing this thing for her, you know, her class. And she says, okay, fine, you can come, but don't try to make it like fun.
No, I know. I know. My daughter's like, you know, I went on a school bus with her before COVID and I'm like, do you want me to sit with you? And she's like, yeah, I guess. I'm like, well, where else am I going to go? Like, am I going to be, you know, on the top of the bus as we're driving through yeah. the canyon? Like, okay. So yeah, no, it's an interesting thing. Yeah.
Well, I have been told that, you know, the event that I'm doing, I can't have her in my group. She's like, you have to be with another group. So I'm not even going to be with her. So anyway, yeah. it's all good. It's just, yeah. You know, it's funny. It's yeah. funny. So, but I'm anxious to hear about your mother. Obviously she was a musician, but before we get to your story, I definitely want to talk about your Showtime show that you recently were in, the 7th season of Shameless with William H. Macy. If anybody out there doesn't know, Shameless is so funny, so crazy. It's like about the most horrendous family you've ever met in your life. And at the end of the 6th season, the family is so horrendous that they literally throw their father off the bridge in Chicago, and they leave him for dead. Okay. That's the premise. That's how dark this is. And now it's the opening of the 7th season, and William H. Macy, the father, wakes up in the hospital bed and
I know.
Okay. He's alive. So
yep.
Mary, you tell us from there, because this is just such a great premise, and whoever the writers are, I don't know the writers, but wow, they are so smart. Just terrific.
So Krista Vernoff is an executive producer, but she wrote one of the first episodes I was in, episode 703, I believe. And basically what ends up happening, they throw him in the river because he basically ruined Fiona's wedding. So ruined Fiona's wedding. And so they basically throw him into the East River. They leave him for dead. Of course he's alive because he has like 1,000 lives. And then, you know, he tries to move back into the house for like the 80th time. And then they finally get him out and he ends up in a homeless shelter in season 7, episode 3. And that's where he finds me. And he recreates his Shameless family with like total randoms. So I become new Fiona. I become his new Emmy Rossum. And if you've ever
yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, he's like, well, you just said it, but essentially he's like, fuck my family. I'm getting a new family.
Yeah.
So he's just trading them in for sibling and wife for wife. And you, this homeless woman sitting in the shelter, you get to be one of his daughters who happen to be one of the most beautiful women in the world, Emmy Rossum.
Yeah. And so basically, and here's the funniest part is that, and I think it might've been the same episode. My first line to Emmy Rossum, my first line on camera with this lady, who's going to direct me subsequently in another episode on that same season, I call her a bitch. So that's the first I go, bitch. And like, you know, I was like, all right, you know, and she liked me, which is great. And, you know, but the fact of the matter is it was pretty intense. And yeah, I shot Shameless for 6 weeks as new Fiona. I shot 2 weeks in Chicago. William H. Macy was my father. Like, you know, I mean, it was a dream.
Well, you had some pretty rough language with him too, because you called him Daddy Frank. And at one point you're in the bedroom. There's all these kids are sleeping in the same bedroom. And he like peeks into the bedroom and you go, do you want a quick BJ, Daddy Frank?
I know. And that was trending. Like that was trending. And it was,
how did you not laugh?
Well, first of all, when I auditioned for it, I knew that was one of the major lines. I mean, I couldn't. I mean, you're also, I think this was my biggest break to date. You know, I did ER with the same John Wells, you know, same casting director, John Levy, you know, Warner Brothers, but Bonanza Productions.
Officer Trudy Lang.
Yes, of course. And I did that for 2 episodes. So I already been on set you know, with the, not with the same people, but I had some experience under my belt, but the big issue with this was that, you know, here I am playing with some of the biggest stars, people I idolized, you know, and I get to be in a scene. Like, I get to be in a scene with you. It was amazing. So I was starstruck. I kept it under wraps. I think what kind of set the tone for me for the 6 weeks was when I was in the makeup chair at 5 a.m. And I always share the story. Bill Macy put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Welcome to the Shameless family." And at that point, I was like, okay, you know, I'm, and they liked me. I mean, the director of photography loved me, like cinematographer loved me. So I knew I was in good hands, you know?
Okay. A few things, just because we just talked about that, that line that you had to say, yeah. You know, do you want a quick BJ, Daddy Frank, just for our audience to understand. So you're on set, you have to say that line, but of course you're not actually saying that. I mean, you might be saying that to Bill Macy, but he's behind the camera. So in other words, it's not a two shot. They put a master on both of you. Or, I mean, you did do it a master with the both of you in the same scene, but then they did a close-up of you and a close-up of him.
Right.
So, in other words, it maybe becomes not funny, although if you thought about it, you could have probably started laughing on like a rant when you said that. You know what I mean? You could have just like lost it, but then you know that the camera's ticking or whatever, but... I'm just trying to say, like, it's not necessarily funny because you weren't really saying it to him. You're saying it to the camera.
Well, yeah. And it was.
But if you have to do enough takes, it gets funny.
It gets funny. But I also knew, like, this gig was a gig of a lifetime. So I was definitely in the zone and was like, I in my head constantly, I was like, don't fuck up. You know, like just, you know, just be in the zone, you know, and that's where I was. So it wasn't. I've been on sets where you lose it and, you know, you got to take one, take two. But for this one, I was like, I'm just going to. And then if I felt there was an opening, like when we ended up mooning Patsy's Pies, you know, we did where and we were there and there was background performers who I had never met eating pie as my ass is like. I could not say something like, I, you know, hi, nice to meet you. This is my ass. Now,
you have to.
I have to. And I had two children, you know, back to back. You know, most of Westwood at UCLA has seen my lady parts. So I was fine. But this poor gentleman who, you know, I'm coming to LA to live the dream. And then he sees Mary Kennedy's, you know, almost perimenopausal ass, you know, because I was a late mother. Like looking at him while he eats an apple pie, you know. I don't know about you, but it was pretty funny.
I'm telling you, man, you have so many, you know, and everybody living out here in LA after a while, you know, and if you stick to it long enough, you do have these absolutely remarkable situations. But let me ask you about, you know, your costume in Shameless, because, you know, when I see you in Shameless, like you don't look, like you look beautiful. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, I get that you're supposed to be like homeless and hoary or whatever. And your jean jacket is way open and you always have on a bra. But let's face it, those are probably $200 bras. I mean, you look good.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I would say, so the costume designer, she's amazing. Lynn was amazing. They have you come in for a fitting, and the bra actually was a sort of something that I could buy, and I wanted that bra, but it's still in storage. It's still in storage in the you know, over there at the studio. It was funny. I came into my fitting and they had like bras, they had work boots, a couple of skirts, like a chamois shirt that I had, all from places that I shop with. So it wasn't like they went up to like, you know, Fredericks of Hollywood or something and got me this bustier. So it's stuff that you can find. So, and it was great.
But I like that because it adds the realistic, it adds the realistic element that Shameless is. Like they're just normal people.
They're normal people. And, you know, Lynn, who was, you know, is a genius. I mean, everybody on that show is a genius. They're all working together to get that common theme. And what I found, when I put that costume on, I felt her immediately. I felt new Fiona in my shoes. Now you'd think an out-of-work prostitute who works for food, you know, you'd think that she wouldn't necessarily find it in her shoes. She'd find it in her bra or whatever. But when I was walking around, clomping around in those boots, I really got the essence of the character, because they wanted a prostitute that was going to, who's kind of lost her oomph. And so who's in the cold.
And has a lot of attitude.
Has a lot of attitude.
And has seen it all. Yeah.
And so Lynn Paolo, she really, her with casting, with the director, Ian McDonald was my director on 703. He's now one of the executive producers of production for them. He was wonderful. He's a British director. He was like, I knew as soon as you walked in the room that it was your part, because I did look like a prostitute who let herself go. The other ladies that auditioned, God bless them, you know, and all as character actresses, we fall in the same category. We see each other all the time. They looked like high class whores, you know, like call girls. And I literally looked like something out of the combat zone in Boston. I mean, I'm from that area, so I knew exactly how to access her. But true, you're looking at me today, I look like a PTA mom. So you would never put you, you know.
Well, you know. It's so interesting. And I know that you are an acting teacher, and these are things you would tell, I'm sure, your students, that, you know, you got to go in for the right show. So if you're walking onto the set of Shameless, and there's already been six seasons of Shameless, what is your eye telling you? I mean, what are you looking at, and how are they dressing? Now, I know it's a new family, but still, you have the essence of everybody's down and out and very horrible, vile people.
But likable.
So it would make no sense to be like, yeah, but likable. I mean, you did the right thing. But let me ask you, what does the breakdown say on that?
So basically, my agent sent me the breakdown. Well, I got the audition. And here's the deal. I already booked for that casting director. So I went straight to producers. And it basically said, we're looking for new Fiona. They didn't even tell me I was part of a family. And it was hush hush too. Like, I couldn't tell people that I could book Shameless. Like, I had to wait till we were aired. And then there was stuff about nudity. So I had to sign a nudity rider. I had to say that I was okay to do nude. And then when I walked into the audition, I had to sign another nudity rider. And then when I booked the job, I had to sign a nudity rider. So they really took care of us.
Wow.
And, you know, if you think about it, you know, am I on the cover of Maxim? No, I'm a larger size girl, got some curves. And, you know, I did say to my husband, I said, listen, you know, this is the show to do nudity. Like, this is the show to do it. If I'm going to do it, let's do it. And, you know, listen.
It's as real can be.
Right.
Yeah, there's no vanity in this show. I mean, I just love the casting. I love how they did it.
Yeah, and he's a genius. John Levy is incredible. And Bill Macy said that on set. He's an incredible artist when it comes to putting together personalities and artists together to create. That's casting is so important. You know, that's why I'm glad they're recognizing our casting directors more and more now.
Yeah, casting is so difficult because they have to, oh my God, can you imagine? Well, it used to be headshots, you know, and you'd see them on the desks and how they're fitting them into the sequence. And it's like, whoa, 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 we already have a black guy. I can't do another black guy. Or whoa, whoa, hey, we already have a female. Or they try to like add like a female, ethnic and gay all in one person, you know, but they have to make it look a certain way.
Yeah. And we're getting more diverse in our casting, which I think a lot of casting directors really wanted that. You know, like it's kind of, you know, when Crazy Rich Asians came out, you know, some people were like, this is so new. This is so groundbreaking. All of these actors have been around forever. So I'm really glad that we're moving towards a more diverse. And, you know, you do not have to be a size 2, ladies. I'm not a size 2.
Yeah.
Ugh. You know, I'm not a size 2.
I'm telling you, it is so much. It is truly. I was in New York last week and very few catcalls. I was thrilled. You know what I mean? Like, I swear to God, I think it's changing. Well, that, and then I'm 20 years older. But my point is, you know, I mean, you know, that was always so natural when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, you know, like it was like you was expected and you just had to like take it. And now people are more willing to turn around and say, what are you fucking doing?
Yeah, like, you know, and listen, sometimes I'm not going to lie, now that I'm closer to the big, I don't mind a cat call here and there. I actually welcome a cat call.
Yeah. it's so confusing for men. Too bad.
I know. You know, it's sad when I go and have my mammogram and I'm wanting her to tell me that, you know, I'm gorgeous. You know, let's put the lights down low. Tell me I'm gorgeous.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to get over to your story in just a second here. But before we do, I wanted to mention, you guys, that we're still playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show, every Friday night, live on Facebook and YouTube. You have to check it out because we're only going to do it like another 5 weeks and then we're going live again. So like tonight, I'm recording my 24th in a row that we've done each Friday night. And we've had a blast. It's super fun, but we are going to go back to live. So you guys check out Story Smash, the storytelling game show on Facebook, on YouTube every Friday night, 7 p.m. PST. That's Pacific Standard Time for those of you who aren't looking at a thing. But I will say that the shows are on YouTube as well. So you go over to YouTube and you look for Christine Blackburn, subscribe to my channel, and you can watch the past 23 Story Smashes right there, as well as a lot of other great content. You know that. All right, you guys, she's here right now, Mary Kennedy. You've heard her talking. She is an actress and a comedian, and she's also an acting teacher. And she had a reoccurring role on NBC's ER, like we talked about. And she also was I didn't even mention, Mary, you're a comedian. Yes, we know this. But when did that start for you? I don't want to go all the way back, but what year would you say I said I'm going to be a comic?
It was 1996 in New York. And I was cutting contracts for Broadway actors. I was working for an entertainment attorney. And I, at that point, could not perform because it was a conflict of interest. So boyfriend at the time said, you should try stand-up. And I did. And the first night that I did stand-up, I went through the American Comedy Institute, that kind of stuff. I had a producer that said, you're great. And then I started emceeing down at New York Comedy Club for Al Martin.
That is so great. So great. And I know that you performed all over New York, like Gotham and The Stand and all of it. Caroline's, you've worked in all those clubs.
Right. Stand Up New York. Yeah, I've done it all. My home club was Stand Up New York and New York Comedy Club. Now that's Broadway Comedy Club and Greenwich Village. Right. Yeah, that's what that is now. Yeah. And I'm going to be back in New York around October 6th or so. So I will let everyone know my dates. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fabulous. I had a set last week at the Broadway Comedy Club and at Gotham, which was really great.
That's great.
Because I had never performed in that main room before. Yeah, so that was exciting. And even with COVID, there were 200 people there.
Same.
And it's no wonder that you're in a show like Shameless in terms of that it's comedy. I mean, it's not sitcom comedy, but it's definitely dark comedy.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you need that.
And you were also a finalist for the Comedy Festival's Talent Search in Aspen. I got to tell you, man, that's still one of my dreams. And I just, because I've been to Aspen before, I've been to Snowmass, but never for the Comedy Festival. And I always just think, oh, man, I would make that a 10-day vacation so fast. Because I love skiing and I love Colorado. And that must have been so fun. So you were a finalist. That's the HBO Comedy Festival. That's a big deal.
Well, and because I'm my grandmother, I can hear her up in heaven saying, it was the talent search that was in Los Angeles. So it was the pre-talent search to the actual festival. So they did a huge talent search that was in Hollywood. And I was in the finals for that.
Oh, those.
Which was on, yeah. They did.
I see. No, I get
it. They did video footage. Yeah.
As you know, your comedy's also been seen on Comedy Central, Spike, and the USA Network. And like we've been talking about, you were on the 7th season of Shameless as a member of the new Gallagher family, new Fiona. And it's just fabulous. You also do a podcast called Menopod, M-E-N-O-P-O-D, with another funny girl. And you guys are great. You can listen to Menopod anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And you can also find Mary over on her Twitter page at M. Kennedy comedy, M. Kennedy Comedy. That makes sense. And of course, you can also find her at her website, maryekennedy.com. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Mary Kennedy.
So a lot of people ask me where I got my start in comedy and why I'm a stand-up. And the reason is, ladies and gentlemen, is because when my parents got divorced when I was 10, my mom, to support us kids, she was a bookkeeper and also needed to make extra money, started a band in Massachusetts. And it was a wedding band. And my mother, so I remember the ink had not really dried on the divorce papers. We went to the court. We told the judge that, yeah, we wanted my mom to have custody. My father went his way. We saw him on weekends. My mother went her way. And we went straight to the little musician shop in Marblehead, right across the street from the high school. And my mother went in there and bought a Korg, huge, heavy Korg keyboard and a PA system. And, you know, she had piano lessons as a kid. She was in the church folk group. And she basically got in the car after putting the Korg in the back seat of our celebrity wagon and said, "Mom's going to start a band." And she did. And the band consisted of 40-year-old divorcees singing Hot Stuff and Locomotion, called the Mood Swings, And isn't that fun? And I was her roadie. So at that point, I was young. I was 10. So she started, and by the time I was 16, I ended up being her roadie, and she would dress me up in her Marshall's business suit kind of clothing, and I played her manager, and I would make sure that the band got fed, and that the band was safe, and that the band got their drinks and their breaks. And so my mom was the house wedding band for the King's Grant Medieval Inn on Route 1 in Danvers, Massachusetts, and every weekend, 5 shows a weekend. And my mother would make sure that I was there, and I would help her load in and load out. And I was propositioned many times as a 16-year-old looking 35. And I'd have to say my mother was the piano player in the band. And one guy said, "Well, she can join us." I said, "You're an asshole. This is 16. You know, and, you know, my mother was a tough Boston mother, and she gave him two cents, you know, and told him to go, you know what, himself. So it was an interesting childhood. I'm glad I got to do it because I got to really learn the business. But, you know, I got to see the ins and outs of a wedding band as a roadie.
So, I mean, this is all stunning. First of all, how could you even carry the equipment? I mean, some of the stuff must have been, I'm thinking of the amps and stuff. Like, what?
We had dollies. My mother was a, as they say in the Irish culture, a sturdy woman. 5'10", and we'd put it on the dolly and we'd load it in. Plus she had a drummer and a bass player who were a guy. One of the drummers was a Broadway drummer. They would help load it in. You know, I bring in the mic stands and the music stands and the costumes and for her singers.
Oh my God. There were costumes.
There was costumes. There was a fog machine. There was,
okay,
you know,
stop. See, you have so much more to tell me. So wait a second. Tell me about the costumes. Wait, what was it called? The King's Court or the King's Grant?
The King's Grant. So imagine.
The King's Grant. That's the name of the hotel.
Yeah. Imagine like a Best Western, you know, it'll be our sponsor. A Best Western, is it the facade or the facade? The facade of the building were like these weirdo medieval, you know, medieval, like, I don't know. Just like medieval,
like medieval times. I know,
like a Ren Fair. But you gotta understand, we're in Danvers, Massachusetts, right next to where the witch trials were, right? Because it was actually in Danvers, not Salem, Massachusetts. We can talk about that at another time. But their decision was, let's make it a medieval wedding venue, like, and even more so. So it was medieval on one side, but then because we had the Boston weather, they had this like tropical oasis pool that was overchlorinated that they would have the wedding. If they wanted to do the wedding service into the reception, my mother would have to play her piano like in the most humid, bizarro inside pool while kids from other families would be sliding down the pool during the person's wedding. I mean, that's...
That is so brilliant. You have got to put all that detail into that story you just told me, because seriously, this is damn funny. Wait a second. First of all, there's so many things to comment on. They wanted to do it in the pool because that's where they got good pictures. Was that the idea?
They got good pictures and they felt... that they were in Florida, which, you know, if you from the East Coast, everybody's thing is we're going to Florida. Florida is the big thing. We're going to Florida. So instead of spending all that money to go and do a destination wedding, just come to the Medieval Inn and we'll do
that. That is so outrageously funny. However, I grew up in Pittsburgh and I know this is very plausible. I was a lifeguard at a Conley's Motor Inn, same thing for years. And but I was only 16 and I would see, you know, but I would see the musicians coming in and setting up. And sometimes if I work late on Saturdays, they would, you know, already start, the band would start. So I'm very familiar with the scenario. And then I married a musician that was in a band like that. So it's like then it became a nightmare. But the point is that five shows a weekend is successful.
Yeah. No, she was one of the best wedding bands on the North Shore of Boston. And and then in the off season, she'd get gigs. And I remember we had a huge blizzard. And then there was the Swiss Chalet on Route 1 heading towards Boston that she did a gig. We almost got snowed in. And the booker didn't feed them. So I had to run over driving in the snow to like a Pizza Hut and get their food. And, you know, like, yeah. And my mother was pissed that she was pissed that I didn't get her the steak tips and rice from the store down the street. I go, Ma, we're in a blizzard. Like, you know, this is what you get.
Steak tips and rice. That is so funny. Mary, your Boston accent comes out in very specific words like Florida.
Yeah, Florida. Yeah.
And Ma, of course, is very specific. Did you have to try to unlearn the Boston accent?
Yeah, no, it was, I have a joke in my act about it. Like, and it encompasses the whole thing. I said it was affecting my sex life. You know, and I have a night of heavy lovemaking. I turn to the guy next to me and I go, that's a wicked big pissy you got down there, huh? Go Pats. Go Pats. Yeah.
So funny. I think it's such a sweet memory. You're like, you know, so I went with my mom down to Marblehead and you know, she got that chord piano. That's like the sweetest memory, right? Or were you like, are you crazy?
Well, we moved in with my grandmother who was a devout Catholic. Ugh. And my mom, and you know, it was her mom. Like my mom had all of her rehearsals in the garage. So you got to understand, for my grandmother, who was a woman that, like, if there was any screaming in the house, all the windows came down. For her to have a wedding band in her garage was like a horror show for her. But for me, I was like, I learned the older I got and when I started my own career, like, what a ballsy woman, like, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's extremely ballsy because you got to see, like, that you can want something and then do that, you know?
Yeah. And make money. Like she made
and
money.
Make money.
So
was she a good singer?
She didn't sing. So this is what's hilarious. I sang because I knew I couldn't do an instrument because I'd be competing with her. Like it was very like the fact that I do comedy is no mistake. The fact that I'm an actress is no mistake because she wanted nothing to do with that. So I couldn't infringe on her. She tried to teach me piano once. It was a disaster. So I sang. She whenever she sang was a quarter tone flat. Because she had a hearing issue because of all the music training. And she had a really bad ear infection when she was a kid. So my mother couldn't hear pitch, but she could play. So my mother was not a singer, but she had all the notes in the world for me. Because I used to do backup in the band if she needed extra backup. And she'd always pull me up saying, you're flat. And it was never me, just so you know. It's never me. Never, ever.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So who was the lead singer then?
Well, okay. So there was many different incarnations. So the first band was Seabreeze.
Oh, Seabreeze.
Yeah, so Mood Swings was the final one. So there was Seabreeze first, not to be confused with the cranberry cocktail. Seabreeze, who the lead singer was Ann Bowen, who was the lead singer cantor at our Catholic church. And she actually got my mother started in playing organ. So not only did my mother have a band, but then my mother became a church organist for the Catholic church. So it's a whole other, that's another day. So, and I would sing in the choir for that. But anyway, so Anne Bowen, Seabreeze. So remember, Seabreeze. Then jump forward, Anne Bowen decided to go back to the church and do all of her stuff there. And then we met McGay Jones. McGay Jones was the second singer, and she was the big part of Seabreeze. Like, that's what brought Seabreeze to fame, was when we had McGay Jones. And I think my mom went on the road. I did not get to go to this because I had school. They went on the road and they played some house party in New Jersey where Bruce Springsteen
came to.
I know. Okay. He didn't play,
though. But was he really there? Do you think he was really there?
I think he was in the house down the street, and because my mother passed it and that she thought that he heard her piano four houses down, that's how he was there. But anyway,
wow.
For purposes of that. And then McGay left Seabreeze.
But what was McKay Jones like? What was her hook?
She was so sexy, and she was a lounge singer. She was very loungy, had an incredible soprano, and so... Not that Anne wasn't beautiful. Anne was beautiful, but Anne was more of a folk singer. Think Carole King, and then think like McGay Jones, Celine Dion.
Yeah, or Sade or somebody.
Well, yeah, and so.
Oh no, okay. Celine Dion is definitely more specific. Sorry, I messed that up.
Yeah, but so Celine Dion. So they were kind of the hit band, Seabreeze, and they started at the Medieval Inn, and then McGay found love. She had divorced and found love. And then McGay moved on. She moved and said, I don't need this music career. I found love. And my mother was left to pick up the pieces. And that's when we did the open call for three singers. And my mother did the auditions, and we saw all of the singers on the North Shore, and I was there. And then she picked three singers, Joyce, Mary Pat, and Ruby. And then they stayed with the band, and the last gig that this band played, because my mom passed within 6 years, the last gig that they played was probably 7 years ago, where they all reunited. And it was for my comedy show.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Now, Now, did those ladies, Joyce and those ladies, did they wear the same costume, as it were? Were they like the background singers, or what were those three women in one band?
They were the main singers, and they would, whenever they had the lead singer sing, the other girls would be backup. And my mom was piano. She had a bass player and she had drums. And that was, and then sometimes if it was Christmas time, she'd add violins or a saxophone.
I love that. Yeah. And that was the Mood Swings then, all those women.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I see. Well, I like the Mood Swings a lot better than Seabreeze, right? I mean, sure.
I know.
But see, here's the advantage. I mean, listen, I don't have to tell you. Here's the advantage, though, of being able to see your mother create and renew herself and do what it takes. Because I'm sure she didn't have that Korg piano for long, right? Did she upgrade? Do you remember the upgrade of the piano?
She totally upgraded. So, you know, growing up, because I lived for 5 years with my grandmother when I was first a kid, there was a piano in that house. And then when my parents moved to their own place, my father wouldn't let her bring the piano. He refused for her to bring the piano. So for her, every time she got a new piano, it was kind of like she was reinventing herself every time. And then,
instruments will do that.
Yeah. So she,
But why didn't you live with your parents as a child?
Well, I lived with my mom. She moved in with my grandmother. I did not live with my father because they got divorced and he got married again. She wasn't interested in probably us doing that. And I was fine with my mother. Yeah. It was more fun at my mother's house. My father was like a clean freak. He was like, it was very sterile. Yeah. You know, he didn't understand.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of it, doesn't sound like a really too unhealthy, right? I mean, but I don't know. I just remember like in the 70s and 80s, if somebody got divorced, the father, I mean, this was the way it was. They saw their child on the weekend. Oh no, they saw their child on like every Tuesday night for dinner and every other weekend. That's it. Well, like that was a very normal share of the children.
Well, and that's how it was. We saw him every other weekend. I mean, it wasn't, listen, he was the Kennedy side. So you can imagine the years with him, you know, before they got divorced wasn't great. Then he sort of found something and, you know, got his shit together, but it wasn't by any means June Cleaver, but things did get better. But he never understood the band. He never understood my mom. He never understood me going to school for acting. Like, that was horrifying to him. He was like, he's like, be a business person. I go, I'm not, you know? And so he begged me to get my teaching degree, and I did. And that's really helped me with my teaching program, but it just, he didn't get it.
That's very interesting.
I think he probably saw my mother. He saw my mother perform at church a lot. And my mom performed at my wedding on the altar, which was beautiful. That's one of my most favorite memories. But my father wasn't going, let's go see Betty play. There was no.
Okay. This is actually not an uncommon theme. You know, I don't know if you ever heard the story of John F. Kennedy Jr., the hot one, when he went to his mother, Jackie Kennedy, and he told her that he was interested in Daryl Hannah. And his mother said, no, not an actress. Like, what, are you kidding me? Like, no. That's very real. And then if you happen to watch any of The Crown and they talk about, you know, Lady Diana and that, you know, Prince, you know, which one was that? Oh, yeah, the horrible one, you know,
Charles,
that guy.
Charles.
And, you know, she was constantly trying to be his muse and dance and sing for him. She fucking rented out, like, did you know this by the chance? Did you know this,
no,
Mary?
No, I didn't.
What I'm telling you now. Okay. If you watch The Crown, the most recent season, they go way in depth in the Lady Di, Prince Charles story. You know, they're showing like what happened in their relationship. And they were at a Broadway show, and I believe it was Phantom of the Opera. And all of a sudden, Lady Diana whispers into Charles' ear, I'm gonna go to the bathroom or whatever. And she leaves the theater. And the next thing you know, she's on stage with the cast and she gets a solo song while she's singing it to her husband. Like, you know, and the crowd goes wild because they realize it's Lady Diana and she has a very good voice and she's been studying, you know, voice, and she's doing this for her husband. And he just like poo-pooed it. Like, looking down on her that she was trying to entertain. So it is funny, that division of where talent and celebrity meet, that line of, I don't know if you call it Wall Street or business or whatever, because those people sure want to go to the movies and they want to watch Shameless too. You know, they all want the same entertainment, right. But yet they don't want to saddle up next to, because like, you're the muse or you're the theater people. It's so weird.
Or less than. Like, I think the concept, and to my father's credit, he taught me so much about business. So that's helped me too. But I think it's wrapping their head around it. Like, I don't think I would understand the interest, you know, the sort of intrinsic value of creating creativity from the bottom up if I didn't learn it from my mother. So for me, and I joke, you know, with my friends, because I'm in production too, you know, I can make anything out of like tape and paper clips. Like, I mean, that's what I was brought up with and get paid for it. So that to me was, so no matter where you are, whether she's doing five shows a weekend at, you know, Caesar's Palace or the Medieval Inn, I learned that work ethic, I think.
That's cool as hell, man. Oh, I love that. I have a bit of that in me too. But sometimes I get very impatient with people. Like if I'm trying to adjust a light or whatever. And by the time they have said to me, you know, like, well, if I say, hey, listen, you got to move that, you got to move that paper over, whatever. And by the time they say to me, well, how do I stick it on there? It's like, by the time you said that, I could have got the tape, put it on. Like, what are you doing? Like, I can't give you my words because you're too slow. And that's terrible. That's terrible. I feel bad. Sometimes when I have people at the improv working my game show, I'll take them a $20 gift certificate to Starbucks and I'll just hand it to them. And I'll say, listen, sometimes I'm rough. Here's a gift card. Like, just stay with me. Just stay with me. You know what I mean?
Just follow the ball. Yeah, no. And it's interesting. I mean, and that's the crazy thing. I mean, but I also, if you think about it, and this was, I think, my mother's master plan, I got to play characters. Like, by being her roadie and her manager, I got, one day I could be really the bitchy manager, or another day I could be, you know, whatever, use my naivete as a teenager. Wise, maybe not the best choice, but you know what? I've got, and I got to hang with her. you know?
I think it's beautiful. I hope my daughter's getting that from me because I, you know, she sees me working hard and stuff. So I hope she picks it up. And she does because she's doing her own thing and she's very creative. She's got, you know, her, like her note cards all over her room of what's happening. So I think she is getting it, but, yeah, it's exciting. I love being a mom and I also love being in show business. And I think it could be a really cool blend, especially because at least my daughter, she wants to be in the industry and I have the words and the knowledge that of course that can happen. Of course it can. You know what I mean? Like I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, my last thing and I'll end it here is that what also is really cool is that I've been told my kids they can be anything they want. There's none of this going, you're going to get your pre-med, you're going to get, you know, your accounting degree. There's none of that, you know?
They're so lucky. They're so lucky because that is quite a freedom. And most kids don't get that. They don't even have the concept that you can do really what you want. Hey, listen, before we wrap it up, I do want to ask you, top three wedding songs.
Hot Stuff. Hot Stuff. Moni Moni. Actually, oh, yeah. That's true. Moni Moni and At Last.
Aw, I do like At Last. I wish I wasn't so cheesy, but I do love that song.
Yeah, those were.
What about the Elvis song? The one that goes like, you know, wise men say that one.
Oh, yeah. She played that all the time. And that's the weird thing, because her studio, which was not insulated, was under my room. I was singing Misty and Georgia on My Mind when other kids were like singing Madonna. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that. I like that. I have older siblings. I have five older siblings. And so that was all my music, too. I mean, that was all my music because that's what they listen to. So when you grow up in a house of, you know, older siblings, that's that you're going to get that, you know, which I love.
Yeah.
Listen, this has been so much fun talking to you, Mary. You're very, very accomplished. And I know we're going to see you so much more on the big screen. I just know it. I just know it. You're really amazing.
You too.
And a great story. I've never met anybody who was a roadie for their mom. So this was awesome. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You guys can find more about Mary over on her Twitter page at M Kennedy Comedy. And then also follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Mary Kennedy, I hope I see you around town, as it were, as well.
Yes, you will, for sure.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.